I'll call the Plan Planning Commission meeting of Tuesday, December 15th, to order at 6:04. Establish a quorum, starting on my left.
Gloria Fleming, present.
Douglas Ward.
Don Brenner.
Okay, we have a quorum. The record should reflect that Commissioner Norm McClung and Rolando Alonzo are excused by prior arrangement. And we'll do the Pledge of Allegiance. Don, would you lead us, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And I should note that we have our city planner here, Tammy Lasco, and our assistant manager, Corey, in present.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Evening.
Good evening. Added agenda items, any? Anything from staff? No? We'll get rid of that. Public comments.
You must want to say something.
Merry Christmas.
We have a big giant audience here today. And we need to let the record reflect that our city manager, Mr. Rick Allen, has arrived. Either one of you two have any comments you want to make? You may say anything you want. We're real fluid here. No? Okay. Approval of meeting minutes from Tuesday, October the 27th. Any additions, changes, corrections? I'll accept a motion to approve the meeting minutes.
I so move.
Second.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Meetings. Okay. Tammy, are you going to do number 7?
Yes, I am.
Okay. You're up.
All right. So the application that you have in front of you is an application for an exception on a commercial residential mixed-use lot. Mr. Henderson is the owner of the property. He's who's here in the audience. If you have specific questions later, but the application he has filed at this time is to ask for an exception on the accessory dwelling size. You saw probably on his sketch here that he would like to, on this parcel, in time, construct two residential structures, with the back house being the accessory dwelling. And the code right now is written so that the accessory dwelling is to be 30% in size of the principal dwelling. So the request he has put in is to allow him to construct that back house or the accessory dwelling to 50% of size. And so that's the main question for you. He has several parcels out there that he'll probably be coming back for site plan review at a later date. This application is not a site plan review either. This is just an exception request to allow him to do that 50%. In order to do that, obviously, we need to look at a lot of site plan issues right away, make sure that he's got appropriate setbacks and things like that, that he can still fit the setbacks in with the larger structure than allowed by code. You can look at a couple ways. He's asking for an allowance to either have the back house a little larger than would be allowed by code, or as he's phrased it in his application, he's requesting that he not be required to build his front house 3 times the size of his back house. So it depends which way you look at it. But basically it comes down to that ratio in size between the back house and the front house. So the things that we need to step through for that exception, first thing, obviously, permitted uses. It's a commercial residential mixed-use zone, so the residential use is an outright principal use allowed in that zone. This Section 12, special uses. In any zone permitting a residential use, an existing single-family dwelling or existing lawful accessory structure may be altered. And the reason I bring this up, I'll back up a little bit. What he would like to do is build the back house first, and then so he can live in it, and then construct the front house. And so when he constructs that back house, initially, it's just a single family structure. It's not an accessory dwelling, it's just a back house. When he goes to build the front house, however, that back house will have to be turned into an accessory dwelling. So the code does allow the opportunity to apply to have that existing structure turned into an accessory dwelling. But in that section, it talks about that ratio of it being 30%. So again, that's the issue that's before you as to whether he can be allowed to do the 50%. The next items I went over were just code requirements in the staff report. How does it affect the public health, the safety, welfare, comfort, of the convenience of the general welfare? I found the increase in size doesn't affect those issues. But it was just a requirement to go through all those in order to grant the exception. I'll try not to read the whole staff report for you because I know you've already read it, but I want to point out the important aspects. In the exceptions, section 17 of the code, it requires that the proposed use will not create a look of clutter, garishness, glare, obnoxious noise levels, those sorts of things. Again, the increase in size would not impact those things. One of the conditions that you could recommend that I have listed here is that the two buildings have similar form and style so that it doesn't create that look of clutter. The next section in the exceptions, section 17, is that the use furthers the purpose of this ordinance, which implements the comprehensive plan. So I did find that there were a few goals in the comprehensive plan. Goal one being to encourage a wide variety of housing types, and goal three to identify and permit alternatives to traditional stick-built homes, including accessory dwellings. Those are vague in general goals, but it was important to find something in the comprehensive plan that this may or may not support. The next section in the exceptions section is that the establishment of the exception would not impede the normal and orderly development of neighboring properties. And then the section 17.3.6 is that adequate facilities, access roads, drainage, and necessary services would be provided. And through that, we should talk about the right-of-way. I don't know if you saw the map here. There is a right now on his parcel, he has on Anchor Way, there's a 16.5-foot public right-of-way easement on his parcel. And that is in case Anchor Way at some point should be paved and adjusted to be aligning on the property lines. That right-of-way is there to accommodate that. And I have some conditions that I would step through in the recommendation at the end I can talk about regarding that. The other right-of-way issue is on Finley Butte Road, because Finley Butte Road is a high-priority arterial with a future right-of-way of 78 feet. That's wider than it is currently. Any setbacks of the structures would need to be setback accommodating and taking into account that extra right-of-way, which on his site plan right now does do that. But that would have to be a condition of the approval as well. And the next issue talks about ingress and egress into the parcel. Again, this is as a result of an exception. You need to look at and make sure the ingress and egress is accommodated. Right now the driveways are shown off of Anchor Way, which is preferred off of, rather than Finley Butte, because Finley Butte will be a high priority arterial, and we'd rather see them off of Anchor Way, and that's where they are now. Other few that are irrelevant but worth mentioning right now, that if it's a public use or providing public service, that it needs to demonstrate a public need, but this is a private single-family structure. And then the final section is that lot area, lot width, and setbacks meet or exceed minimum requirements and are adequate for the proposed use. And right now, going through all of the commercial residential mixed use setback requirements, his site plan right now shows that. So on the staff recommendations, should you approve this, the recommendations, that I would suggest be made as conditions of the approval would be firming up the 16.5-foot public right-of-way on the anchorway side. Right now it's written in an old 1950s deed that isn't, it's easy to find, but it's not as clear as it could be. And the engineer recommended that that be recorded as a public easement as a separate document before building permits are issued. And we can work with the applicant to figure out that process to streamline it so that it's a straightforward process because it would be a public right-of-way grant. The second condition would be that the principal structure and the accessory dwelling are designed and constructed with similar style and form, as I mentioned, just so that they, you don't create a look of clutter with two separate structures. Similar colors, exactly, similar colors, similar materials. Continued communication with the city so that we are in agreement with the setbacks. As any development would need to do, needs to go for building permits, and the city needs to have the opportunity to again review the setbacks to make sure that they haven't changed from where they are today. And as I mentioned earlier, the accommodation for the future right-of-way, 6.5 feet on Anchorway, and the 9 feet on Finley Butte, to make sure that all setbacks are recorded off of those or measured off of those future right-of-ways. Because at some point the roads may need to be widened and we don't want to have interference with any of those structures. And then right now this is proposed as a single family residential use. I've talked to the applicant about is that if the use ever changed or any sort of land division occurred, there would need to be a discussion on right-of-way dedications for both, well, for Finley Butte, there's already a right-of-way dedication on Anchor, but the commercial use would trigger the TSP involvement and the land partition would also trigger the TSP involvement. And at that time would also need to have a 6-foot wide sidewalk in place at the edge of the right-of-way, at the edge of the new right-of-way, the new 78-foot width to accommodate the future development on Finley Butte. And again, that will be a result of triggering the requirements in the TSP. And then just the final note was just that this application and any decision that results from tonight is not considered a review of the site plan. It's a review of the exception. So we would still need to have all the building permits processed through the county. If the use changed at all to commercial, obviously we need to go through site plan review, but the city still needs the opportunity to do all setback reviews. And that sums up my long list of section reviews. Do you guys have questions for me on that?
No, that's pretty clear to me. Don, any questions for you?
No, I think it's pretty clear.
Okay.
To cut to the chase, what are your recommendations? Sure. Other than this, I mean, if these restrictions that you laid out to us are met, is it your position that we should approve it?
This was one that Corey and I felt like we wanted to hear some discussion and feedback from you since the 30% was your the city's code requirement. From all of the different measures and sections that I've stepped through in the findings, I don't find it to impact the neighboring properties. You could argue that by allowing to go to a larger size, you're circumventing some sort of site plan process, but the setbacks are all set into, they're all appropriate at this point. They meet the requirements. It does meet the goal of the comp plan to provide some flexibility in housing type. But I do feel strongly that if the use were to change or if anything was going to be changed to duplex or multifamily, more than just a single family structure, there needs to be a lot of different a site plan review that involves different infrastructure, septic tanks and things like that. And it still needs to go through all that, but if it got higher density and became a duplex or a different use, it would have to go through more rigorous review.
The reason I asked the question is because I drove by there and in my opinion, to develop that property would really add to the city. It would not take away from it. Sorry, go ahead.
I had a couple of things. Well, this is, you know, when we did the comp plan, this is exactly, we were very, we wanted to leave it open to exceptions. We have the rules, but we wanted to be very flexible because we wanted to be able to make changes. Is the intent for this to be a rental or something in the future, or is it a guest house, does that even play into it at all?
From the planning perspective, you know, I have to consider it as a single family structure. I don't know the intent, long-term intent of the owner.
But that wouldn't have, I mean, would that then become commercial if it was a rental, or?
No, it wouldn't change it, right?
It
wouldn't have to. I mean, if it, you know, if you increase the density, then I think we're, and made it a duplex, somehow split some of the buildings, or made it mixed use, so maybe you had commercial downstairs and apartment up above. Those start triggering some different zoning changes and use changes and a lot more requirements. But whether it becomes a rental, you know, whether he rents a single family home or not, no.
Well, these kinds of developments actually would ease our housing situation as far as, you know, if it was a rental, you know, that's something that I would encourage as long as it's, you know, kept, I mean, as long as they're going, like you said, they don't want the clutter look. Mm-hmm. And and is this going to be on septic or is it going to be on the sewer?
My understanding is that there will be a septic tank in place. But
so the sewers don't go out?
No,
I mean, that's just for my own information.
Septic tank, but on your sewer system.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
But that will become city sewer and city water sometime, won't it?
It's already city sewer and city water.
There would be a tank, but it would also connect to the system.
It's on on water, just not on sewer.
No, it's on sewer.
It's
our
on sewer,
sewer system has septic tanks.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right. It's called a step system.
Okay. Corey, did you have any comments you wanted to make about this?
I thought Tammy really laid out the issues pretty thoroughly, and again, focusing on the issue of the 30% accessory dwelling question.
Mm-hmm.
And understanding that it's going to be a single family residence until the other structure is built, and then it will be considered an accessory dwelling because we don't allow two single family residences on one lot. So
Okay.
Technically it would have said the code, and correct me if I'm wrong, Tammy, that you would have to build the accessory dwelling in conjunction with the home. But again, like you kind of alluded to, Gloria, is that we've been working with Scott pretty extensively to try to find out what flexibility there is
mm-hmm.
built into the rules that exist right now. And this avenue right now, I think the applicant clearly is here tonight proposing this, and I think it's one way forward with what he's proposing right now. So.
Mr. Allen, would you like to make any comments?
You know, I've let them basically handle this.
I didn't hear you.
Oh, I said I've let these guys handle.
You have to turn your mic on.
There's no mic right here. So it's been a while since I've looked at this. So, yeah. I mean, I wasn't that keen on it, but, you know, it's... From the beginning, I haven't been, but you know, if it's gonna, if something's gonna, I guess, work, I probably like these guys. You know, in a perfect world, we don't want garages, basically garages, and with maybe that's not what you want to drive by, is just garages. And you know, you don't know when the house is gonna be in this. Is there, was there a requirement when this house is built or any timelines on that?
No, the way that the back house or the accessory dwelling, future accessory dwelling, the first structure to be built, is designed from what we've been shown. It is considered as a standalone single family unit. It has a kitchen, it has two, you know, two bedrooms, one bath, a garage of its own, so it can be considered its own single-family structure.
All right. It is. Would you like to make some comments to the commission? If you would, if you want to, will you come up and have a seat?
Sure.
Because I'm sure we have a couple of questions for you. On that microphone system, this is the high-tech microphone system. Depress the red button and then talk into it.
Just speak a little louder when you press the red button and we'll think it's on.
So I guess, first off, do you have a specific question at all that you want me to answer?
Well, I have a couple of questions. The picture you have here of the home that you're going to build first.
Phase one, is that what you
did? Yeah, on page two, that is going to look like this picture, right? I mean, that's what you're planning on building for you to live in, is that correct?
Hold on.
Page 206.
Yeah,
I got a different. So what I did was, because there was not a clear, you know, I didn't want to spend money. I don't have money to spend on doing something. That's a picture off the internet of something very similar. I now, because it looked like things were kind of moving forward, this is going to be a little more closer to what I'm proposing at this point.
So it's a garage?
Basically, the porch went away and...
A little different than that.
Yeah.
Same
size.
You're going to find that we are really picky on clutter. Okay, we don't approve anything that the owner or the builder or the developer cannot promise to this panel that they're going to keep it clean, neat, orderly, and not turn it into a ghetto junkyard. That's a real big thing with us. So I ask you, you're not, are you?
No. The whole plan of this was... you know, not to come in asking for a trailer or a pole barn or something. I mean, there's plenty of that around me. This is, as you can see from both drawings, that this has got siding on it. It's got, you know, nice composition roof, nice windows. The point of having this accessory building is that it gives me eventually four garages, you know, so I can keep, you know, the motorcycle or the boat out of the weather, out of sight. And not just parked on the side of the house. I mean, this is something that I would like to have to benefit keeping the property looking nice.
Good, because we're real sticky on that. We really are. And what we want the Pine to look like is a nice place to live. And we're not against any building. Mm-hmm. We're not against any development as long as it's the right development. As long as it's the, and if you can assure me that you're going to maintain a good upkeep, well then I'm all in favor of what you want to do. I have absolutely, with everything you put together here, I have absolutely no problem approving this whatsoever. Mm-hmm. But it has to be understood by everybody that comes before this panel, that we're not going to put up with any clutter or any ghetto at all. We're just not going to do it. Mm-hmm. Period. We've got enough of it already. Mm-hmm. We don't need any more.
So, you're not into cookie cutter
either. Oh, yeah. I had a hard time finding my truck Sunday morning. I looked outside. What's this big lump in my driveway? It's all white, got wheels on it. Jeez. Anything else you'd like to pass along to us?
I don't think so. I just, you know, everything sounds really good to me. Again, I think it's a benefit to the community, and doing this will help me keep my place clean, but it also helps reduce the cost of, so I can go on, and she had mentioned, you know, some alternative housing or some rentals. I mean, ultimately, I got two other lots that I would like to invest in. If you've driven by that, they're older. Hopefully you've noticed an improvement over the last couple months. The neighbors do. Spent a lot of time out there working on them, painting, peeling paint, burning bitter brush and pulling that out and removing trash off there. So, and you know, basically I'm asking for 300 more square feet of living space. So it's a pretty, in my opinion, a pretty minor exemption. I think will make a big difference in the long run.
Well, like Gloria already brought out, when we drafted all these plans and codes and made all these decisions, we left room for changes. Mm-hmm. We left room to grant
exceptions.
An exception to someone who was sincere mm-hmm. and wanted to do something that would benefit the city. Mm-hmm. And I personally have no problem with that. Mm-hmm. Okay. Corey, does this require a motion to be done by the panel to be sent to the city council, or if we pass or reject a motion, is that the end of it?
Your motion, the lab, or the
form. We make the decision right now.
Correct.
Okay. Any problems with you two?
No, the only thing that I, you know, just the reminder that if any sort of land division occurs, you know, partition, there needs to be a lot more infrastructure work, but we've already talked about that, so as it stands, no land issues.
I would second that. It's been an ongoing dialogue between Mr. Henderson and the city over the course of several months, looking into what he could do with that property because it is a very flexible zone. We think we've been responsive in trying to work with him in that regard. And again, with the issue that is in front of us, again, I want to second Tammy's thoroughness on that staff report and recommendations. If it was some other proposal, again, multifamily or commercial, that would change things largely. So I just want to put an exclamation mark to that point.
I personally like that. I like that. Don't tell me I can't do it. Tell me how I can do it, rather than, you know, you just can't do it. So.
Do you have anything, Mr.?
No, I think it's fine. We're going to get some right away on.
Are
we going to?
Well, the anchor way easement is what we're working on to get documented as public right away right now. Well, the Finley Butte right of way would be triggered. When it came to commercial parcel or something like that. But right now with a single family, we're requesting, and this is in discussion with the engineer as well, we're requesting that setbacks be set back right now from that future right-of-way line so we can be prepared for that when that does come. Yeah.
No, I think it's fine.
Well, if we would make a motion to accept this plan with the recommendations of staff included, that would pretty much cover things, wouldn't it?
Actually, we wouldn't be. We would be voting to for the exception.
The exception.
We haven't seen a real actual site plan, right?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. The decision tonight is only that exception for that extra 50%, or for the total of 50%, the extra 300 square feet that he mentioned, with the conditions that are attached to it in the staff report.
If we approve this, does he have to come back with a site plan to be approved at a later time when you get ready to build?
He would
or is this a free go?
This would, he would not necessarily need to come back to the Planning Commission unless he's asking for any sort of variance.
It will go through you.
He will go through the Deschutes County for building permits, and then as part of that, through Corey and I, to look at setbacks and make sure we're still in communication with the same setbacks in the future right-of-ways.
Do you have anything else, Gloria?
Yeah, one thing I want to make this really clear here, too. This is an exception to him. It does not a blanket.
Absolutely.
No. Everybody has to come for an exception on this.
Yes.
Anybody else that wanted to do the same thing.
Yes, okay. And the same case has to be made for each individual parcel.
That's what, yeah.
And that we step through how it impacts the neighborhood around it.
What is your timeline for when you want to start building? About next July, when the snow melts?
I wanted to be building this fall, but we didn't quite get our game together. So, basically, I'm ready to go. And obviously, we're in winter. You know, I don't want to be, you know, having frozen foundations and stuff like that. So, hopefully, we can get through this process and through the Deschutes County and have the permits in place so that it's ready to go in the spring. Okay.
Donald, do you have any additional questions?
No, I'm in favor of it.
I'm in favor of it too. Okay. Then I'll ask for a motion to be made on an exception request for 51395 Anchor Way for an increased size of accessory dwelling.
I so move.
Second.
All right. We have a vote. Roll call vote, please.
Gloria Fleming, aye.
Don Greiner, aye.
And Douglas Ward, aye. All right, congratulations. The sooner you get started,
thank you very much.
We can start collecting more taxes from you.
Well, that's in the letter there, too. You'll be making money.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Can I grab this thing?
Any other matters from staff? No?
Nope, we're going to be kicking the legislative rezone into gear in the next few months. So you all, including Rolando and Norman, will be kept up to date on that process, and we'll probably be doing some open house type events, a lot of public outreach involved in that process, so stay tuned.
Will we be in a quasi-judicial position on that, or if it has to do with the public, input?
I'll look at the procedures and see, and that will need to go Planning Commission and Council.
Okay.
And it's hundreds of parcels.
And
they're not, most of them are not drastic rezones. It's just to get our maps in line and connect with our comp plan. So for example, there's a number of parcels that are R10 right now, carryover from county zoning, that match more of our comp plan zoning here in the Pine as residential. So some change in terminology. And a few other changes. EFU to residential. EFU, we don't have an EFU zoning in the comp plan. So things like that. And as we get closer, we can step through all those different changes and some of the benefits of each of those changes. And we're starting to look through them parcel by parcel now to see if there's any outliers or anything that we should look at a little more closely before we go out for public input and workshops.
Are you seeing any, just in kind of looking at it, any big pushback on it or anything? Or
nothing glaring at this point. Just from looking at it at a pretty cursory level, because there are 400 of them, looking at it in groups, it makes a lot of sense, and it gets the city closer, or hopefully to, the one map system. Right now, if somebody comes in, we've got two maps posted, existing zoning and comp plan zoning, and sometimes it can get a little confusing as to what's the zoning and why is it different, and it was set up that way based on the timing of when the transportation system plan was adopted, but now because it's in place, we can move all over to one. So the rezone makes a lot of sense. At this point, we haven't identified any highly controversial issues. There will certainly be, I think, folks that come out and ask a lot of questions and want to know how it affects them long term and whether it changes their rights. And I would hope that it would benefit them, honestly.
Okay.
I can see, we talked earlier, I think Kegel subdivision is one area where right now you're 10 acre. You basically, you can't subdivide any of those lots. You know, you've got your 1 or 2 acres and that's what you got. And when you've, under the plan, it gets rezoned to residential. And residential can be much denser than that. Now, what I've told them is we may want to end up, there's a couple ways to do it. We may want to, you know, come up with something that doesn't allow that to be parcelized. So if you're on a 1, you're on a 1, you're on a 2, you're on a 2. And some of that, and because I think that's an issue, because when you sewer it, then then people may start wanting to divide their 2 into 4 half-acre lots. And then that increases a lot of traffic, and you're on gravel roads. But even if the roads are paved, you know, that's been platted, people are a little more rural out there, bigger lots, and my assumption is they like it that way. But the plan, the current residential zone that they're overlaying, is the same as Huntington Meadows. And you can't put a motorhome next to your garage or you'd be in your neighbor's property. Some of you might find that tighter than you would like. Mm-hmm. So that is one that I think has to be talked about and you need to formulate some opinions on. And then the rodeo grounds, we may be throwing in with this to get them where we want them because they're not zoned properly, so we met with them today. And then also St. Charles Hospital with their new clinic is on possibly on property that's zoned for is it forest or public?
It's, right, it's going to be public.
Public facility, so that's got to become commercial. So that shouldn't be controversial, but those are a couple extras that aren't part of what we were doing because of when we formed as a city. These are what we're doing. We figure we're going to throw those in and get this because you don't want to do zone changes all the time. So, and we were talking about some ideas in on cable. How do you address that? Because I feel that from what I hear from people out there, they don't want, certainly with dirt roads, they do not want more traffic. But we haven't talked to those people formally.
And that's something we would want to do before we go through the full legislative rezone to know how to address that in advance, whether it's with some sort of an overlay for that region, whether it's adapting some different code for that area. There's a lot of different options that we can do as we start getting into it. We'll look into that.
Okay. Don, closing comments?
I don't know if this is whether we should talk about it now or if I should talk to Rick after. I want to talk about the snow plowing at Crescent Creek.
That's fine. Your lack of it.
No, I'm not complaining. I want to.
Well, what happened? I think what Vic and I are gonna. Corey, first of all, what happened is that the phones started ringing. My phone, because when people call here, it kicks to me. At least most people it does, but then some people it doesn't. I'm not sure how it decides who gets to me, but it does.
Only the cranky ones.
Yeah. So I started. I was actually at a movie, and my phone started ringing, and so I took a break because I thought, what's up? And that was Sunday afternoon or evening, and yeah, I had a bunch of upset people. So I started calling our contractor, you know, talked to him, made some other calls, texted Corey. And Corey, of course, he got into City Hall because he had no power, and his cell service wouldn't work, but he drove in here. So we were doing all this on Sunday night. You know, and then Vic and I talked Monday a couple times. Ultimately, we called the county. And I got the county to send a couple extra plows out. So we know there's some weak spots in the system. But I think what happened in talking with them today, but we're going to flush it more, is number one, we have a new contractor in that end of the, we used to have 2, now we have 1. So that was a new area. And that means their plow guys have never done that area. And then number two, the guy that did the dispatch for the plows for the company felt that it was snowing, and even though it got in our contract, I think it's 6 inches. At 6 inches, they're supposed to start plowing. Mm-hmm. Well, the guy was trying to save us money and thinking he was doing, he said, since it's snowing, let's wait, because otherwise we're going to have to plow it twice. Well, then the problem is you no longer can plow it.
Yeah.
So that's why he didn't plow on Saturday. The real problem was Sunday. Was no plowing Saturday. So when you had the 6 inches, you didn't plow. You waited overnight and you had this. Then they started plowing and then it was wet. You had power lines down, you had trees down. The whole thing basically fell apart. If they had taken that first 6 or 8 inches off on Saturday, you would have had that much less. See, and they learned that lesson. And I think that's where I'm thinking the real thing is. Number two, Corin, I talked via text and email and different things. I think we need to come up with, which we haven't had, a kind of a normal snow, and then maybe we'd have, call it, it's like a 3-alarm fire, a 2-alarm fire, you move to a second level, and then we have to know what happens. Do we call in, does our contractor have the freedom then to call in extra contractors? Like Mid-State called in Pacific Power.
Yeah.
Pacific Power comes in, and they have agreements. So if we exceed our capacity to plow based on our one contract, what happens at that next level? It's kind of, again, it's like a 2-alarm fire, bring in Sun River and Bend, and then you have a 3rd alarm. And so that's what we need to do, is figure out at these different, we need to have 2 or 3 levels. We could have 3 feet in one day, and we need a system that addresses that. And maybe that's once every decade. We haven't had any, you know, we've been lulled to sleep the last few years. So anyway, I think it's a combination of things. And we got it all done by yesterday. It was pretty well worked out. You know, the normal complaints that you get, no matter if how many plows you have, is the berms.
The berms.
I can't get out of my driveway.
The mailboxes.
Mailboxes. And then public usage roads that aren't city or county roads. Why aren't you plowing? So, but those happen in every snowstorm, whether it's 6 inches or 3 feet.
Well, I was more considered about, when I was on the council, if I remember right, the first year we had a snow on the council, or we were a city, there was a big hassle about plowing Crescent Creek and who was paying for it. And if I remember right, the city agreed to plow and charge the county for their roads and not do the private roads. That was the agreement that I thought we had at that time. Has that changed?
Well, we plow, other than the major roads like Huntington, we have, you know, Reed, Finley Butte, so on. We plow all of the county roads inside the city,
right,
for them, and then we plow our city streets.
Right.
We actually never have exchanged money. We just kind of.
Well, but the point is that I think that there was an argument with Crescent Creek, was it, about who was paying for it?
No. The roads in Crescent Creek are public roads owned by the city and, well, or I should say, and the city or the county own all the roads. Well, we don't do your alleyways,
yeah,
and we don't do that. But no, Don, actually, they are either a city street or they're a county road or street. Same with Huntington Meadows. 2/3 of Huntington Meadows is county, and the last row is city.
Well, if I remember right, when I was on the council, we were billing, members of Crescent Creek were being billed for snow removal by the association, and then the discussion, if I remember right, between you and me was that that's not right because it's double billing.
Well, I think that we did research and discovered that those were county or city roads.
Right, that's right.
So they may be still charging you and putting it in their fund. I have no idea about that.
Don, we had a gentleman
that's come where in. All this stemmed from.
Oh, did it? You already talked to him. Never mind. Thanks, Ashley.
That's fine. I pretty much got the answer.
Thank you. I'll throw a question at you. I talked to Corey yesterday about sidewalks. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you right now that our plan that we've had for sidewalks, having someone that lives there come out and does the sidewalk, it ain't gonna work. I went down Huntington Sunday, and the berm on the sidewalks was 4 feet high, the whole length of Huntington. I recommended, and I think you ought to really seriously think about it, is that we hire somebody to do the sidewalks. Because I talked to the board at the senior center, And they told me that if anybody in this world thought that 80-year-old grandma was going to go out there and do the sidewalk, they're crazy. They're not going to do it. Period.
Nope, she's
not. And in front of the park, it was that high. I don't even know what she used to remove that kind of amount of snow.
Is that because the snow plow threw it?
Yeah, the snow plow piled it all up the side of it. So I would just recommend that you somehow find some money somewhere to have somebody hired to come along and do sidewalks.
I don't see that happening.
Well, what are you going to do then? You're not going to have any sidewalks.
I think that depending on the snowstorm, it may be the average snow when you're getting 6 inches to a foot, it's manageable. And when you start getting to 15, 16, 18 inches, it becomes unmanageable. It's much like a flood. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some things that government, you know, on one hand, everyone wants smaller, less government. Mm-hmm. But then we are very quick in wanting it to grow. And you know, you had a big snowstorm.
Yeah, we did.
And sidewalks are blocked, entrances are blocked, mm-hmm. and government really can't go around and plow every sidewalk in this town. It is not even feasible. And so I think that, you know, you just live with it. And on days like this, you stay home. You know, I mean, we just can't solve everything. And I'm not sure you even want it solved. I mean, it's just...
Well, I was just making
yeah.
a suggestion.
Well, no, what I'm saying is I think it would cost thousands of dollars each snow. And
yeah, probably would.
With all the different sidewalks, I don't know of a jurisdiction that plows. In other words, we'll have a policy that says people take care of it. And if you do, you do. And if you don't, didn't we say it when we talked about it the other day, there's no one getting arrested.
Yeah.
And so if the senior center doesn't want to.
Both. All three.
Then
the thing is, you can get in and out of the senior center. You can get into the businesses, in and out of the businesses. It's just that it's not all clear. We went to the senior center, and I mean, mm-hmm. it's, you know, you could get in and out. So the other's just inconvenience.
Mm-hmm.
People aren't taking walks.
Yeah.
See, now, my road wasn't plowed until after dark Sunday.
Yeah.
I had to go out there with a flashlight and a shovel. The berm was this high. And that's called a snow berm. Tomorrow morning, that's called an ice berm.
Yeah.
And I had to go out there in the dark and shovel it out so my wife could get out in the morning to go to work.
Correct.
And
nothing new there.
Yeah, well, true. But it's never happened before. And I've been here 20 years and seen a lot more snow than this. And that's never happened before.
Well, I don't know where the snow came from. I mean, hey.
Well, who knows?
I don't know. My mom's from Michigan, and it might be too late with the way you guys have designed everything, but their sidewalks a lot of times become pretty much useless. But the thing is, they usually have shoulders. And so if the plow trucks plow the lane in the shoulder, then people can still get around pretty easily, and you kind of just let your sidewalk sit there until the snow's gone.
Well, in our TSP, you have bioswales, and you move the sidewalks away from the street, and you have that buffer zone that theoretically the snow would be plowed into that.
Yeah.
And then it would thaw, and it would do what it's supposed to do and infiltrate into the ground, and the sidewalk wouldn't be dealing with that inundation of added
yeah,
snow.
That's
so that's the vision.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, you know, I was saying, if you looked at I was in a meeting this morning with St. Charles, and yeah, they were talking about all the Bend was in trouble for the Thanksgiving snow, which wasn't very much because they didn't do the side streets, and you know, it just, snow is one of those things, and you know, society, people are wanting, you know, the instant gratification, everything done. I mean, you know, I had someone call me. You know, and they said that they weren't sure that they couldn't get out, and they were very upset. And you know, their kid was going to school in Bend, and you know, because I said, well, the school bus will be out, thinking they go to school in La Pine.
Yeah.
Well, they said, well, no, but we have to go to Bend. Well, I said, oh, I said, you know, I you know, I can't help you. You know, I mean, you know, there's just certain things. I mean, they made a choice to live in La Pine and send their kids to Bend. It's okay. I'm very big on life as choices, and I make some dumb ones. And I have a cabin at Camp Sherman, and I have went there and tried to pull in, and there is no place to pull off, and the berm is as high of ice, and I try to find me a spot somewhere, and I go back with a shovel and dig it out. I call no one. I've chosen to have a cabin at Camp Sherman at 3,500 feet. People live in Lapine at 4,200 feet. You're gonna have snow.
4,350.
Okay, whatever it is. And so, I mean, maybe I'm the only one that thinks that way, but I just don't know how we can try our best. The main roads are done, and you shorten the distance. Is it perfect? No.
Don't misunderstand us.
Oh, no, I'm not.
You're doing a great job.
No, I'm not.
You're doing a great job. Everybody's doing a great job. We all understand. I'm gonna entertain a motion to adjourn.
So, move.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye, aye, aye.
Rick, I want you to know we had a great day.